This is Twit.
Apple just held its Apple Silicon event where it announced three new Macs. Leo and I covered the event live, and I am excited to say, given that he didn't get to get all of his explanations and answers and nerdiness out on MacBreak Weekly, we are joined by Renee Ritchie here on Tech News Weekly. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Micah Sargent. Always an honor to be with you.
And with you, sir. So let us just get rolling. Kind of going into this event, I think that people who pay any attention to this knew that this was going to be Apple's Mac event. And it kicked off pretty quickly. I mean, we just got right into the nitty-gritty of it pretty fast. So let's start with Apple's M1 chip. What is it? How does it compare, as far as we know, to the A14? And kind of what does this speak to in a larger context of where Apple is going with its Mac computers?
So I think, to just be slightly nerdy about it, the M1 is sort of like an A14X Plus. So if you took the A14 and the current iPad Air and the iPhone 12s and you souped it up the way Apple usually does for the iPad Pro, you add two more of those Firestorm high-performance cores, four more GPUs. They do have a lower-end model with seven, probably just to save costs on binning the chips, but they're eight GPUs. And then you add some Mac-specific stuff that makes hypervisor virtualization faster, stuff that makes Rosetta emulation faster, Thunderbolt controllers, just the Mackety Mac stuff. And then you basically have M1. So it's Apple's latest generation IP, their latest generation silicon, just purpose built for the Mac.
One of the things that they touched on a lot that I think people might wonder, and something, if you go to Apple's website and you go look at the Macs, just like they do, I think, in the mobile space, in the iPhone and iPad space, is talk a lot about ML, machine learning, and the neural engine that's built into this. Can you talk about how that translates to a user of one of these things? I buy a Mac Mini, and I know it's got this neural engine built into it. What does that mean in terms of the apps that I'm using every day, or the apps that I use sometimes as I'm going about my Mac browsing?
So sure. So once upon a time, just the GPU, the graphics processing unit, would have handled all of this. It would just have sort of been a generic ability to crunch large amounts of data. But what Apple started doing, what a lot of people started doing, is making these dedicated neural engines to process machine learning in an optimized way. And Apple actually has the machine learning, the now 16-core Apple neural engine, the ANE, and they also have machine learning accelerators on the CPU, and they have something called a neural engine controller that decides whether it's actually the GPU still, or the neural engine, or the machine learning, which is sort of like small cores for machine learning on the CPU. And it just means anything that requires what we would call artificial intelligence, but it's not really. It's like those smart Photoshop filters that can turn black and white pictures into color, or can smooth out JPEG images, or can take a small resolution image and scale it up without it becoming all blocky, or can do like computational photography so our pictures look better, or computational audio so the speakers sound any better than the atoms themselves give them any right to. It's basically about enhancing all the bits in our world.
Got it. So, I mean, that makes it pretty important. Let's talk about the machine that tends to be, or at least tended to be, Apple's big, most popular machine. You know, I remember in college seeing everybody and everyone having a MacBook Air, and many journalism outlets having MacBook Airs as the device that they gave to their journalists, that they gave to their writers and everybody else. So we've got a new MacBook Air, and it's fanless, which is really interesting. Yeah. What all has changed about the MacBook Air, and what does the M1 kind of change about this new MacBook Air?
Yeah, it's really, I think this is one of the ones that interests me the most, because the original MacBook Air was sort of like this experiment in Steve Jobs's, you know, manila envelope. But the second generation one was famous. It changed the way we looked at Ultrabooks forever. And it had a full like a full size Intel chip in it. But the more recent models have used the Intel Y series, which I've never really liked because they're far too power constrained. They don't take a lot of power, but they don't produce much performance either. And what Apple's doing with these is, because the M series performs so well, they're able to drive this machine without a fan. It's the same M series chip, the same M1 that's in the MacBook Pro, that's in the Mac Mini. The only difference is there's no active cooling. So it won't run at peak frequencies for as long. It'll ramp down faster. So it's like a rendering video. Day-to-day things like opening apps, surfing web pages, that'll be exactly the same performance as a MacBook Pro. Rendering big graphics, it'll slow down a bit over time. But it'll also give you like 50% more battery life on the MacBook Air, which is this huge gain. Like, not only is it better performance, but it'll give you 50% more battery life. And who doesn't want that?
Right. More battery life always. So we've got the MacBook Air, and then we've got the Mac Mini. Kind of, while we didn't know if we were going to see a Mac Mini for sure at this event, it was kind of rumored that there would be a MacBook Air and then the 13-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pros. I was not surprised to see the Mac Mini per se, because as Apple was trying to show the new Apple Silicon way of doing things, they shipped out Mac Minis to developers with, what was it, the A13 chip inside?
A12Z.
Oh, A12. Yeah, that's right. A12Z. We went even farther back. So, what has changed about the Mac Mini, and does this become even more of that that sort of home theater, home server computer, or less of that? Kind of how does the M1 help or hinder that experience?
So this one is actually a little bit of both, because it is a step forward in terms of it's moving to Apple Silicon, but it's a step back in terms of the last, even though Apple didn't update the Mac Mini regularly, you know, it was kind of atrocious how little attention they paid it. But this version is very similar to like a MacBook Air style Mac Mini. It has only two Thunderbolt ports because the current M1 only supports two Thunderbolt ports. And it's gone back to silver to show you that this is not the Pro version of the Mac Mini. The Pro version gets the space gray color. So I think this is sort of meant to be that traditional Mac Mini, the one that if you just want to add a Mac, if you're a developer, you just want to plug one in, you want to do something for home theater, like you said. My guess is when we get M1X, or whatever Apple calls the chip that goes into the eventual iMac and 16-inch MacBook Pro, there will be a new Mac Mini Pro in space gray that is, you know, more attuned to high pros and server workloads.
That makes sense. So then now we've got to add the Pro moniker with the MacBook Pro. It has a built-in, it has the fan built into it. It's still just two Thunderbolt ports, because as we've said, the M1 is two Thunderbolt ports. It's Thunderbolt 4, USB 4. What are we looking at with this 13-inch MacBook Pro? Is Apple positioning this as sort of a portable machine for doing some pro work, and then you come back to a more powerful machine in your home office? Or is this, you know, everything that it's chalked up to be? And, well, I shouldn't say everything is chalked up to be, but everything that a pro or a prosumer would expect from a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
It's sort of like, you know, no matter where you live, anyone who's one village to the north is a northerner. So it's sort of like that with pros. You know, anybody who does your workload or more is a pro, and anyone else who isn't. But I think Apple discovered with the 2016 MacBook Pro that there's a whole bunch of people who just self-identify as pro, and they're new style pros. Maybe they're founders, or they're starting off a project, or they're working in social media, and they don't need the brute power of a traditional pro, but they consider themselves that. They want that brand. And so, like, this is, to me, very similar to that 2016 MacBook Pro with only two ports that Apple said was like the Retina MacBook Air back then they'd never made. And this just slots in there. So I don't want to downplay the performance. There's going to be much more powerful MacBook Pros coming. But just with these chips, we've seen some early Geekbench scores leak out. People keep forgetting Geekbench uploads all the scores. We've seen them leak out, and it's outperforming 16-inch MacBook Pros just on the M1 chip. So I think it's going to be that best of both, is for people who really are pros, who want the most performance they can get. But 20 hours, twice the battery life, I think is going to be super appealing to them.
So that becomes my question, because I see it one way and I see it another way. And, some people are complaining it only gets up to 16 gigabytes of RAM. Other people seem to be fine with that. The Geekbench scores come back. And I just saw something today that was like, at the high end, it's outperforming every Mac save for, and like multi-core, it's outperforming every Mac save for the most ramped up iMac Pros. And at the single core, it's outperforming every single Mac. So what I've got right here, a 16-inch MacBook Pro from 2019 with a 2.4 gigahertz, 8-core Intel Core i9, 32 gigabytes of RAM, and the AMD Radeon Pro 5600 graphics card, and of course the built-in Intel one, and like a 2 terabyte hard drive. So this is a powerful, powerful, powerful machine. I'm curious, when we look at these single core and multi-core performance things, how much does that translate when it comes to the work that, you and I are doing, you more so than I these days, of being in Final Cut all day? I mean, do you still plan to use your 16-inch MacBook Pro as your machine for color grading and video editing? And I don't know exactly how all of that works, but the this proper lighting tones and all those things that you do. Is this machine going to hold up, or is it really a consumer machine and it's just everybody's kind of exploding with excitement about the single core and multi-core performance, but that only speaks to part of the story?
I think actually there's a lot of people who are just stuck in the past. Like, Apple's not even selling these based on frequency. Like, everyone gets the same clock speed. It's really more of an iPad model in the best ways, and for some people probably the worst ways. But these are going to be absolute beasts. For me, I'm going to stay on the 16-inch if I don't move to something bigger, just because I need the biggest display I can get. If I didn't care about the display size, I would be on these in a hot minute. Like, yes, they're limited to 16 gigabytes of RAM, but that was true with the Intel Max. If they needed to use LPDDR4, the low power memory, and that's what Apple's using in these Macs, so they have the same limitation. You can use more power hungry Macs, but then you hurt the battery life, and that's not the goal of this round of Macs. These are supposed to be ultimate battery life machines, and if you don't care about that as much, you care about ultimate power more, you'll get one of the next generation Pros, like the 16-inch that does use slightly more power hungry parts. So I think people are getting in their own way thinking about this. These are going to run, especially Final Cut. It's going to take Adobe a year or two to port everything over, but especially for Final Cut, the only job that Apple's engineers had was to make these machines run as fast as possible, given the constraints of the computer's casing and the laws of physics and time. Time and space were their only limits. So they're going to be faster than anything we've ever experienced before.
All right. Well, that kind of clears it up then. Although these two displays, if I'm not mistaken, you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong on the MacBook Air, but the MacBook Pro has the P3 wide color display, correct? And I think the MacBook Air does?
They both do now. Yeah, they both do now, except the MacBook Pro is still 100 nits brighter. So if brightness really matters to you,
it's a differentiator. So smaller display, but better color reproduction, which you aren't getting on the 16-inch MacBook Pro, right? The current 16-inch.
Oh, they're good. The 16-inch are good. And the 16-inch also do the variable megahertz. They can go between 48 and 60 hertz, depending if you edit in 30 frames per second, or like I and all good-hearted people do in 24 frames per second.
Yes, I agree. 24 frames per second all the way.